Shalom Haverim and hello friends. You may have noticed that spring has sprung and summer is knocking on our front door. It is just around the corner. It's supposed to be, what, 87 degrees today, is that right? It tis the season then for weddings. Wedding season is upon us, and many people around the country, probably around the northern hemisphere, will be committing their lives to one another. But not only do many people get married during this time, those of us that have been around the sun a few times, many people like to renew their vows during this time. And I saw this picture. I'm not making any suggestions, but I see some elbows back there. I saw this picture this week of a farmer, a famous farmer, and his wife renewing their vows this past week. I thought I would share this picture with you this morning. Here's a picture of the famous farmer, Old MacDonald, and his wife. They're renewing their vows, and their vows are, of course, E-I-E-I-O. Yeah, that's about all the more of a giggle that deserves right there, renewing their vows. Speaking of farming, this past week I had the chance to travel to Ohio, spent some time with my family of origin. I grew up, I've said many times here, on a dairy farm in Ohio. So this week I got a chance to travel for a couple days. What I didn't share last week, I mentioned that I have these niece and nephew, 4-year-olds. What I didn't mention is that their mother was expecting to have the third child. So my sister-in-law, Cassandra, she was expecting to have this child at any time. And because it's springtime in Ohio, it means a lot of extra work. You may, if you've been around farming, you know that there's always the chores that need to be done. The cows need fed, the pigs need slop. All these things need to be done. And when spring comes around, there's more chores just to add to the list, because now you have to work the fields, you have to plant the seeds. All of these things are just added to your already busy schedule. So add all of that together, plus add a new baby, and it makes a lot more work. So this past Monday, I got the phone call from my mother that my sister-in-law was going into the hospital to be induced. The baby would be coming, so I packed up the Prius and I headed north, because you never know if they're going to need you or not. You know, not for the actual delivery of the baby, but for the other things, for the chores, for the work. You know, if they did need me, they would be in a lot of trouble. I've birthed many calves, but that's not quite the same thing. But I was going to be there, though, to help watch the twins. I was going to be there to help with the chores. I was going to be there to help with other activities. So I made the trip to Ohio, and here's a picture of the green rolling hills of Ohio. That barn up there in the top corner, that's where I grew up. And not in the barn, but there's a house kind of hidden there in the trees. This is the view from the silo on the dairy farm. Kind of cut out there. You can see the manure pit down the bottom corner. Isn't it beautiful? So I did some chores. I helped watch Max and Grace, the 4-year-old twins. I got to be there. Here's Max and Grace holding their new baby brother, Logan. And of course, while I'm there, I too have to take my turn holding the baby. Yeah, right, of course. What good uncle wouldn't do that? I learned a new word this morning, actually. I'm the funkle. I'm the fun uncle, so I'm the funkle there holding baby Logan, 7 pounds, 7 ounces. So I did the chores. I watched the kids, and of course, there's always work to be done. My little brother has been renovating their house for the last decade or so. you laugh, but it's true. They started with the basement, and it's a livable space now. They have a bedroom and a kitchen down there, and they're trying to do the upstairs because, you know, their family just grew. They became a family of 5, so he's been trying to get things done, so I helped with insulation. I helped to hang drywall this week. Yeah, thank you, sir. It looks good from that distance, doesn't it? That's a closet. We also did their bathroom, got that all finished up. And I put in a lot of hours. You know, people say, oh, you went to Ohio for a vacation? I say, no. Worked on these things I didn't get up too early, but the drywall stuff, we were doing that until it got too dark to work. So almost 9 o'clock, we're up there working, hanging drywall. And so much work was done on this vacation. Does anybody know how much I got paid for all these hours of time that I put in there? Right. You're right. $0. Somebody said it. I got paid with mom's cookies, food, and a new nephew.
That's right.
Right, right. So why did I do all this? It cost me 3 tanks of gas to get there and back. Granted, the Prius only has an 8-gallon tank, but still, it cost me money to go and to come back. And if I got $0, why did I do all this? Well, it's my family, right? This is my family we're talking about. And I don't know if you've ever noticed this. It's not just my family. The men in my family specifically have a hard time using that L word. Some of you said it. I can say the word. I can say love. What's hard is to direct it towards another person, towards another person in my family, towards another male in my family. This is the way I was growing up. You don't say the word to each other. So what do? We show it. And I know I could do a lot better job of saying it. But because I'm not a gift giver, I tend to be frugal. I tend to be cheap. I'm not one that shows my love and appreciation by buying things for people. I show my love and appreciation through acts of service, by doing things, by coming and helping out when needed. Well, today we're going to explore this verse a little bit. This very famous line from John's Gospel, John chapter 13, verse 34. Jesus says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." So I mentioned with the children, though, that's a challenge, isn't it? What is the deal with that? Jesus is commanding us to love. And I mean, I wasn't the most popular guy in high school. I know, hold on. You're surprised. I wasn't the most popular guy with the ladies. I would have loved to be able to command some people to love me back that, those days. Did it work like that? No. So today we're going to kind of explore what Jesus is saying here, what this is all about, this command to love one another. So we're going to start this morning by kind of going back. This is something that if you've been around this church for a while, you've heard me preach on before. And even if this is like your first Sunday here at this church, you've probably heard somebody preach about the different Greek words for love. Is that new to anybody here? Okay, so this is going to be a refresher for you today because I'm going to guess there's a few people here that maybe have forgotten a few of those Greek words. So first of all, I want to remind you that there are There are 4 different Greek words that are translated as love in the Greek New Testament. 3 of those are common words. We find them quite frequently throughout those books of the Bible. There are actually 6 different Greek words that are translated as love. 6 ancient Greek words. Not all of those are found in the Bible, but a total of 6. So for me, that says that there is a shortcoming in our English language because I use the same word, love, to describe the way I feel about my family of origin, the way I feel about my wife, and the way I feel about ice cream. So there's something that doesn't quite line up. It's just an inadequacy of our language. And that's one reason why I love to explore the original text. So here's your refresher. The 3 common Greek words, 3 out of the 4 that we see throughout the New Testament. Of course, we know one of them is eros. And we're a small group. Let's get involved here. Let's say each one of these words together. Say eros. Eros is physical attraction. That's the, how you doing kind of love right there. That is where we get the word erotic from. Thank you, Bernie. Quickly moving along. I started it by saying, "How you doing?" And I did my best Joey voice. I'm sorry. 2nd one is philia. Everybody together, say philia. Philia is familial love. That is like friendship. And the good way to remember this, if you take the Greek word for brother, which is adelphos, combine it with philia, you get philia adelphos. Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. So philia is that familial friendship, that brotherly love. And then there's the one that we always hear about, these sermons that we always get about, the 3rd and most common one. It is agape. Everybody say agape. Agape is charity. It is sacrificial love. These are the 3 most common words translated as love in the New Testament. Now, when I worked with my brother, when I helped him watch his children, when I helped him hang drywall, when I did those stinky chores, which kind of love was I showing? That's a trick question, I'm going to warn you. There's two of them. The philia is what led me there to Ohio to help him out. That brotherly love, that connection that we have. Because I love him like a brother, I went to Ohio to help him out. But while I was there, I performed acts of agape. That was this charitable love, this self-sacrificial love, giving of my time, giving of myself, not expecting anything in return. So I want to point out here before we move on, eros and philia, these are feelings. Agape is an action. Keep that in mind. We're going to circle back to this in a little bit. Eros and philia are feelings. Agape requires action. So when we look at these texts, I always like to back up to look at the context. What is going on in this chapter? What happens in the verses preceding our text for this morning? And if we look at John chapter 13, this is a passage where a very famous event takes place. Jesus and his disciples, they have their Last Supper. Now, John tells the story slightly different than other Gospels. He includes aspects that are not included in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And one of the things that John includes is this event known as foot washing. So it starts with this event where Jesus and his disciples, they're gathered together, the 12 plus Jesus, 13 of them all together in the upper room. And it says in John's gospel that Jesus knows what's going on. He knows that Judas is going to betray him. He knows that Peter is going to deny even knowing him. So when you're surrounded with your 12 closest friends, one of them is a betrayer, the other one's going to deny you. What are you going to do with that group? You wash their feet, right? That's normal. That's what you do. Jesus takes off his outer garment. He wraps it around his waist. He bends down at the feet, the stinkiest, one of the stinkiest parts of the human body, and he begins to cleanse them, washing them, drying them. This is an act that is below his station in life. This is God incarnate washing the feet of the disciples, doing the role, taking on the role of a servant. Of course, some of the disciples, Jesus, or Peter especially, he says, no, you're not going to wash my feet. And Jesus says, well, then you'll have no part in me. This is about what we're doing here. This is what we do. We wash feet. Jesus says it like this. He says, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. He's telling his disciples to go out and wash feet. Go out and wash feet. And he's not saying it because they have bad hygiene, and maybe that was a part of it back in those days. Did everybody here wash your feet, either today or last night in the shower? That's good, otherwise athlete's foot could be a problem. He's not saying people have bad hygiene, so get out there and wash feet. No, he's calling them to serve one another. He's saying, do what I just did. Take on these roles, these responsibilities. Even though it may be below you in many ways, take on this role of a servant. Now, this is the time I'm going to pat. Everybody, can you reach back your back? Pat yourselves on the back. This is my
commandment, that you pat one another.
You don't have to do it if you don't want. But I like to kind of pat Mennonites on the back, because this is something that I think that we have done really well with. So I know it sounds like it's back to us, but we Mennonites historically have just done a really good job of serving one another. Historically, do you know what jobs are, outside of farming, what jobs are the most common in the Mennonite church? They're jobs of service. Teachers and nurses, people of that nature, people that do so much for us that we often take for granted. I went on a field trip with Hadley, first grade field trip to the Frontier Culture Museum about a week and a half ago. And her teacher, we like her teacher. She's a good teacher. Sometimes we have frustrations with her. That's just the way schoolwork goes. But when I went on this field trip with them, I was surprised. You know, she's not just a teacher. She's a fight breaker-upper. She's the nose wiper. She's the snack carrier. All that on top of being an educator. Now, we Mennonites have a disproportionate number of teachers and nurses. People doing these jobs that they often don't get the pay that they deserve. They often don't get the respect that they deserve. But they do it as a service to other people. Another thing I noticed this week, some of us have experience with Eastern Mennonite University. I know there's a number of graduates here. And one of the things that I really respect about EMU is that they offer an alternative spring break trip every year. Actually, they often offer multiple alternative spring break trips where students will go and do service projects. When so many of the other kids are going to colleges around the world, they're going off to places like beaches and having fun and relaxing, and that's fine in of itself. These students have instead chosen to go to the poorest parts of the world to do relief work, to clean up debris, to serve the underprivileged people of the world. It's a part of the DNA of the Mennonite church to be people who wash feet. Maybe not literally, but metaphorically, serving people like Jesus served. And over the last couple of weeks, we mentioned this in our Sunday school hour, we've been raising money for this Spanish church plant in Waynesboro. And I reported about a month or two ago that this church is now fully funded, and they're now meeting regularly on Saturday evenings. The church is called Iglesia Cristiana Shalom Nuevo They go by the church Iglesia Shalom for short. This church is meeting now in Waynesboro, has been meeting since March 30. I know that one. It means March 30th. Nobody's impressed with my Spanish. Okay, March 30th. They've been meeting now for 8 weeks. 2 weeks ago, this church, they're not even a church yet, this church plant, they had a project. There was a woman in their community who needed a new roof. So this church that had existed for 6 weeks at that time re-roofed her house for her. You get that? So what do you do whenever you've been meeting together for 6 weeks? How do you celebrate your 6 week anniversary of serving the Latino population of Augusta County? You re-roof a neighbor's house. I think it's beautiful that no matter what your age, what your ethnicity, it's a part of the Mennonite DNA that we serve one another. We take Jesus' commandment to wash feet very literally, well, more metaphorically. We take it very seriously. That we are called to serve one another. Now we come back to verse 34. Jesus says, "The new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." Now let me ask you a question. If he's using the word eros there, does that make any sense? You know, I command you to be attracted to that woman over there. And that's not how it works. Right? You've heard the phrase, you know, I'm just not into you, right? There's nothing you can do. I don't find that attractive. You know, he's not commanding people to be attracted physically to other people. Is he commanding people to be attracted to people with the philia, the brotherly love? You know, be bros with that guy. Be a brother from another mother. Does that make sense? Like, have common interests with that person? No. But if he's commanding people to serve one another, if he's commanding people to have that agape love, if he's commanding people to be like he was and wash the feet of one another, that makes sense. So out of those three options, I ask you, friends, which form of love do you think Jesus used here in this passage? I open it up. Was it eros, philia, or agape? You don't even need your Greek lexicons. That word is agape. So we go on and find various places throughout the gospel. Places like, you've heard this passage before, John 3:16. This is probably one of the best known passages in all of Christianity. John says this about Jesus. He says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life." That's a central message for Christianity. But I also think another central message is found in 1 John 3:16. 1 John 3:16 says this is how we know what love is. Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. Time for a quiz again. What form of love do you think Jesus uses, or John uses here when he refers to the love that God had for the world, that he sent his one and only Son? Guess what it is. What is it altogether? It's agape. When he says, this is how we know what love is, that Jesus laid his life down for his people. What kind of love is that? It is agape. The very love that God had and created the world out of is agape love. The very love that Jesus showed when he laid down his life is agape love. And I think that it doesn't mean that we have to literally die for one another, but it means we follow Jesus' example. It means that when Jesus could have had all the power in the world, he chose instead to spend his time with the tax collectors and the sinners and the prostitutes. He laid down his reputation. And people questioned, yeah, this guy is a glutton, this guy is a drunkard. He laid down his power and said, I'd rather hang out with these people. He sacrificed all he had. And why did he sacrifice? He sacrificed out of love. So we come back to that commandment. Oh, that's not that one yet. The commandment to love one another is a commandment to serve one another with the love that Jesus had. Can you command somebody to serve another person? Yeah. Yeah, you can. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He says this in verse 35. He follows up and he makes agape love the marker of Christianity. If you are a Christian, you will be loving people with this kind of love. He says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So being back in my home community this week, it reminds me of a lot of the things that happened growing up and a lot of the experiences that I had, the highs and the lows, the goods and the bads. I'm sure anybody that's been away from home and gone back, you know what that's like. And I was reminded of the very ultra-conservative Anabaptist group that I grew up in. And in this ultra-conservative Anabaptist group, this group was really, I use the word, it's kind of strong, but they were skeptical, they were almost afraid of people outside of that specific religious tradition. If you weren't a part of this church, you were looked upon with suspicion. And you could always tell who was a part of this church because of the way that they wore their head coverings. You know, every different Anabaptist group has different head coverings. This was a specific one. You knew your group by their head coverings. Or you knew by the length of the skirt that this woman was a part of your church and not a part of a different. You knew based on the way the men dressed or what jobs they had. You had to either be a farmer or you worked with the family industry. You made cabinets. Something of that nature. And I remember growing up that if you went to a different church, well, you didn't go to a different church. If you went, or if you were a part of this church, you were discouraged from going to a worship service in another congregation because you might be misled. You might hear bad things. You might be encouraged to do things like, I don't know, cut your hair or wear pants if you're a woman. I'm being a little critical here, but I can be a little bit critical. And there was this practice whenever we were having conversations with people outside of the church, about people outside of the church. And you wanted to know if somebody was a Christian or not. You might ask the question, well, is Billy Bob a Christian? And the standard response was, they profess to be a Christian. They profess to be a Christian. Billy Bob claims to be a Christian. He goes to church. But the way I hear that is, yeah, Billy Bob claims to be a Christian. And yes, he goes to church, but because he's outside our group, because he's not a part of who we are, because he dresses differently, because he has a television set, or because whatever reason it might be, we can't say for sure whether or not he is a Christian. So is Billy Bob a Christian? I don't know. He professes to be one. Now, I look at this passage again from Jesus, and Jesus says, That's not the one I wanted. Jesus says, they will know you are a Christian. They will know you are my disciples by what again? By your love. He doesn't say they will know you are a Christian by your theology. They will know you are my disciple by your right beliefs. He doesn't say they will know you are my disciple by which translation of the Bible you read. They will know you are my disciple by who you voted for, whether you voted Republican or Democrat or didn't vote at all. They won't know you are a Christian by the length of your skirt or the length of your hair or the lapels on your jacket or the lack thereof. They will not know you are a Christian by these things. They will know you are a Christian by your love. And again, when Jesus says they'll know you are a Christian by your love, which word do you think he used for that? use the word agape. It says here in 1 John 4:8 that the very essence of God is love. 1 John 4:8 says, whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. Let's keep playing the game. You want to guess which word Jesus uses there to describe the love of God? It is agape. At one point, Jesus says things like, we're called to love our enemies. And it's not like Jesus didn't say you won't have enemies. He says, yeah, there's going to be people you're not going to like. There's going to be people you don't get along with. But love them anyways. Want to guess which word he uses there to describe the love we're supposed to have for our enemies? It's agape. You can command somebody to serve them, even if you don't have those warm, fuzzy feelings of eros or philia. You can still serve somebody, even if you don't like them. At one point, Jesus says, he's asked, what is the most important command? And Jesus offers two in return. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. And the second is love your neighbor as yourself. You know the rules here. What word does Jesus use to describe that kind of love? It is agape. Now, I'm not saying that theology isn't important. I like theology. I'm not saying it's not important how or if you vote. I'm not saying it doesn't matter how or what you wear or where you go to church. All these things matter. But the point that Jesus is making, the point that I'm trying to make this morning, is that all these things must be done out of love, and a certain kind of love. Not love for yourself, not erotic love or lusting for another person or lusting for power. It's done out of love for others, a self-emptying love, the love that Jesus showed us on the cross. That love is called agape. So if you want to know if somebody is a Christian, there's one specific marker you look for. Are they loving? Are they serving other people? Are they laying their life down like Jesus laid his life down for us? If they're doing these things, that, my friend, is a disciple of Jesus Christ.